Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, everybody, we're in overtime. It's the bottom of the 11th. The bases are loaded. I just beamed Michael Costa to load up the bases because you want that force play. He was giving me the stink out a whole game, so I had to hit his ass with a baseball. The Daily Show is a whole ball game, but the Beyond the Scenes podcast, we're like extra innings. That's just a little bit extra baseball for your money. It's where we take some of your favorite segments that you've seen on the Daily Show and go deep with them. I mean, deep like a home run, but deep like is in more information. You know what the hell I mean. Today's episode is completely unrelated to sports. We're talking about the world of music and music streaming and the way musicians have been getting shortchanged by the record industry. It's a segment that we call If You Don't Know, Now You Know. And if you missed that episode, here's a little bit of it.
The internet has changed so many aspects of media consumption, but few have had a more tumultuous relationship with these changes than the music industry. CDs became the standard medium in the 1990s. At the same time, home computers were becoming more commonplace.
Software like Napster paved the way for a new era of piracy. CD sales plummeted as more and more people logged on. With the introduction of the iPod and MP3 players, the industry did see a boost from digital downloads, but it wasn't enough to make up for the dwindling physical format sales. The breakthrough came in 2011. Instead of buying and owning songs and albums, we started listening to ads or paying monthly fees in exchange for access to, essentially, all the music in the world.
Online streaming music became an $11 billion industry, making up 56% of global music industry revenues in 2019. Spotify has dominated the streaming music industry with about 130 million premium subscribers worldwide.
So streaming has been the best thing to happen to the music industry since the government created LSD. But even as these services have arguably saved music, they're not exactly sharing the wealth.
Even though in America, people are spending more money than ever before on music, musician pay is at an all-time low. While the music industry reportedly made a whopping $43 billion in 2017, the bands and artists themselves only walked away with a mere 12% of the cut.
Spotify pays close to 70% of its revenues to the people who own the rights to the music. That's usually the recording labels.
The amount artists receive on a single play is minuscule. On Spotify, that number is somewhere around 0.004 cents per play.
Dozens of young artists coming to me on Twitter every day going, I've got however many million plays, I have 200,000 monthly listeners, I do not make minimum wage.
Joining me today to help fix the music industry is Daily Show senior writer Mr. Daniel Radosh and a gentleman who I believe needs no introduction, singer, songwriter, composer, just an all-around good brother. Hello, Black. How are y'all doing?
Doing good.
Hello, hello. Good to be here. Thank you.
So, you know, for Radosh, just so we can set the context first before we get into Aloe and, you know, what he brings to this conversation.
Definitely start with me, Roy. That's who people want to hear from right now.
Well, yes, yes, yes. Let's discuss music with the gentleman for the people who can't see you. It's a wonderful, wonderful bedroom. There's lots of books and music. You're clearly a cultured man. Okay? Sidebar. Only trust people with unorganized bookshelves. Your bookshelf is not organized by color. Some of your books are horizontal. The rest of them shits is vertical. You don't care because you actually read those books. I don't trust anybody that designed a bookshelf. Who you trying to lie to?
Yeah, the books come in and they go back in after I read them, and then if I want to find them again, I never can.
So this segment, if you don't know, now you know, where you all go deeper and deeper into, you know, a lot of issues that are usually commonplace, surface level conversations. Break down this segment exactly with regards to the music industry and the pros and cons of the rise in streamers.
Yeah, well, like you said, you know, this is one of those things where, you know, we all the writers and producers on the show, we're always like reading everything and, you know, watching everything. Most of the time we just focus on like what the big news of the day is, because that's, you know, it's a daily show, so we got to do something every day. A few months back, I was just on Twitter and a video came across my feed that was actually put up by a new organization. It was called the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers. I'd never heard of this group, but it was about, you know, Spotify. And so I watched this video, and I kind of knew, everybody who listens to music kind of knows, generally has a sense that, you know, musicians are kind of getting screwed over these days. But I watched the video, and there was one thing in there in particular that made me sit up and think, oh, there might be a story in there, because there's stuff in here I didn't know. I had always kind of thought the reason musicians are making less money now is that there's less money, that people are spending less money on music, right? We all kind of heard, oh, you know, people stopped buying CDs and they started, you know, stealing music on Napster, and then it kind of came back through downloads and streaming. But once people stopped buying CDs, the money never came back. And one thing that I learned when I was finding out about this is that there's actually more money going into the music industry now than ever before. It's just not going to the artists. And I didn't realize that. And Alo, you're probably like, hell yeah, I know that. But like, I didn't. Right. I get just always under the impression that, you know, the reason people are making less money is there is less money. And in fact, that's not true.
There was a lot in this that I didn't know. Like, I knew, and as a stand-up comedian who has had two Comedy Central Hour specials, you're welcome. You do get a little pinch when your shit airs on the streamers or whatever, but as a comedian, comedy is like jazz, and it's such a back of the record store genre that you're not really doing that to cash in. I did not know that the number was $43 billion that the music industry brought in last year, yet somehow artists only got 12% of that. You wouldn't have this shit without us.
That's what I'm saying.
Especially now, because like back in the day, it seemed like, oh, well, music labels did work. You know, they got the records into the store and they did promotion and they, you know, they got it out there to people. But Alo, now you probably do a lot of that stuff yourself now, right?
Yeah, Alo, break this down. How did you get involved in this? Because I know that you were very vocal about this.
I got involved because I had one of the biggest songs in the world in 2013, 2014, Wake Me Up.
So wake me up when it's all over. When I'm wiser and I'm older, all this time I was finding myself and I didn't know I was lost.
And I was looking at the streams total and then looking at the money that came in from the streams total, and it just wasn't making sense. So I'm a songwriter and a singer. Not every artist who's singing their songs is also writing the songs. But when I looked at the math, it just wasn't adding up. You know, I'd rather have a dollar per download or somebody purchasing a CD than 0.004 cents for a stream. It's not a tenable situation for most of the artists.
Do you think, Alo, just as an artist, do you think that streaming, what are some of the pros of streaming? Do you think it saved the music industry to a degree? Because the music industry was taking a bath. And I know that's where a lot of those 360 deals came from, because the record labels figured out, oh shit, we're not going to make any money off you from album sales. So I want a piece of your t-shirts and your Live Nation and all your tour dates. And then we'll make sure your song gets on the radio. So do you think streaming in a way saved the music industry?
I do give it some credit. So I was part of that Napster generation when I was in college. I was downloading all kinds of free music. And so it wasn't going to be possible for artists to make money if everybody's downloading the music for free. Having an organized system by which there is some sort of subscription paid, some money paid, will put money back into the system, then gets distributed to the artist. However, the way that the system works right now isn't an equitable system. So I would give the streaming industry some credit for saving the music industry, but it was also in a moment where we're always rapidly transforming and progressing, evolving with technology. Things are always going to change. If we can have artists at the table, though, to make some of those decisions on how it changes, so that we can continue to offer value, really valuable music and art, then I think it'll make for a much more fair playing ground. You know,
that thing that you said about you know, giving them some credit, is that's one of the things I think that made this like a piece we wanted to do, because we all do love streaming. I mean, we love Spotify. Like, I listen to so much more music now, and I'm exposed to so much different music now than I was when I was just buying CDs, because there's no barrier to entry to just listen to anything. You know, I started listening to like Norwegian pop music because I just saw this, you know, weird looking dude with long hair.
Yeah,
and I was related. Like, well, what is that? And I was like, oh, this is cool, right?
The algorithm got your ass.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like if the story is like, oh, there's like an evil oil company that's like spilling oil into the ocean and killing all the fish, that's not necessarily a great story for The Daily Show, because what are you going to say? You're going to be like, yeah, well, they're bad. But like with Spotify, we're like, oh yeah, you know, it sucks that the artists are, you know, being treated so badly, but like, we don't want to go back to a system where we're paying $15 for a CD. Like, this system is better as somebody who listens to music. I don't want to say like as a music consumer, because like I don't want to think about music as like a commercial transaction in that way.
Right.
But like as a listener, it's like, I don't want to have to give this up. So I like hearing you say that like there's a way to fix this problem for you.
Yeah.
That doesn't involve me having to go back to CDs.
There's a guilt as a consumer that you feel. It's kind of like if you own an iPhone or a pair of Nikes, where it's like, well, how do you fix that? And then, yeah, like it's, how do you all rate us at the show? How do you all decide when to, because this isn't necessarily a political thing, but this is an issue of labor. How do you all decide on the writer's wing and then the producer side of the show, which is just a whole side of the building that I'm rarely on unless y'all got pizza over there? How do you decide that this piece gets through the political noise to make it onto the show?
Well, I mean, honestly, we're always looking for pieces that are, I mean, it's political, but it's political in a different way. You know, we do so much politics, and this is like pop culture, but once you start to break it down, then you kind of get sucked into the political angle, and we kind of, mm-hmm. anything where we can like sneak it in, we always find that more interesting. Plus, you know, we're always looking for how can we make it a little bit more lively than just, you know, Trevor sitting talking to the camera. I mean, look, Trevor's great at sitting and talking to the camera, but once somebody said, oh, if we do something on music, what if we had like a song at the end of it? And then we thought, well, what if we get one of these musicians who, like, you know, because there are a lot of people, a lot of musicians who have spoken up and have been vocal about it. But, like, you know, we knew, Allo, like, you know, our audience loves you. And we actually had a clip in the segment of, you know, about the thing you were just talking about how you realized you weren't getting money out of your song.
Allo Black co-wrote the 2013 hit song Wake Me Up. It quickly became one of the most streamed songs in Pandora's history. But in an article for Wired magazine, Black wrote, in return for co-writing a major hit song, I've earned less than $4,000 domestically from the largest digital music service.
$4,000 for a number one hit? Guys, you know the music industry's messed up when the guys singing your songs on the subway make more money off of it than you do.
So once we knew that would be in the show, and like, man, you've already got a song called I Need a Dollar. Like, that could not be more perfect for writing a parody version of. So we were like, all right, let's go out to him, see if he's willing to do it. And then as soon as he was like, yeah, I'll do that, we're like, okay, this is getting on the air.
Allo, what's different about this battle now? Because as far as I know, the record industry has always been shady. Is it the addition of the streamers now playing the role of co-conspirator? Or is it the fact that this system, this construct was kind of built before our eyes over the last, you know, 10 to 15 years?
Good question. It was built before our eyes. You saw it happening. What you didn't see was the inside baseball, where Spotify, looking like it's standing alone, is ultimately heavily, heavily invested in by the major record label corporations. So Spotify doesn't really have much say. And when I joined the fight, I was joining the fight really as a songwriter. Look, what is John Lennon or Paul McCartney without the lyrics and melody that they wrote, right? What is a song without the lyric and the melody? You could get a great Michael Jackson song,
correct,
and hear 300-400 different versions of it, right? At the end of the day, it's that unitary piece, that morsel, that nucleus, the songwriting. And when I learned that the songwriters get 1/14 of the income out of all this, I thought to myself, that doesn't make any sense. Where would the music industry be without that piece of intellectual property, the actual songwriting, the underlying work? And so I just started doing more digging and just getting involved in the fight.
I give the music industry this much, Radosh. At least they do it to white artists too. It's some equal opportunity bullshit. Like, this ain't just a shady ass record label that just, oh, you stole all my royalties. Like, no, the industry's like, fuck all y'all.
Yeah. Well, they already did that part. They already did all the stealing from the black musicians, and now they're like, who else do we have left to steal from? I want to go back to the thing you were talking about songwriting, because that's something else that I discovered working on this piece. But first, I want to say something else that I learned that was another thing that I didn't realize that I found so interesting. We always hear, artists make, I think it's like 0.004 cents per stream, which is terrible just on its face, right? It's not a lot of money. But what I learned is that that's actually not even how it works. That's a very rough estimate, because in fact, artists don't make any money at all per stream. What happens is when you put money into Spotify or any of these services, whether you're paying for it, you know, like a subscription or advertising dollars or whatever it is, it all goes into a big pot. And then they divide that pot up so that, you know, by who's gets the most streams. So the biggest artists who have the most streams, they get the biggest chunk of the pot. And then it goes down from there, which means that if I pay $15 a month for Spotify, and Drake or Lil Nas X or someone has like the most streams that month, even if I never listen to them, and I do, don't get me wrong, I listen to some Lil Nas X, but even if I didn't, even if I was like, I'm gonna like find some indie band from Brooklyn, New York, because I know these guys, you know, and I don't want them begging out on the street corner. I want to like support them through Spotify. I'm gonna play their music. 60% of my $15 is still going to go to Drake that month, because even though I didn't listen to him, everyone else did. And Drake, that's such a weird way. Yeah, it's such a weird way to divide up the music. And so now I know some people are saying, well, look, whatever else you do, just make sure we get one penny for every stream. Just every time you stream an artist at all, one penny, we'll be making so much more money. Allo, do you think, like, is that a good way to earn money, or is there some better system?
Yeah, it's a problem, the rates paid per stream. Like, how do we make this more equitable?
The problem is the rates paid per stream, and the issue is that as an artist, as a businessman, right, I don't get to choose my price. Any other industry, you get to choose your price. As an entrepreneur, you get to say, this is what I'm willing to sell my wares for, and if there's a willing buyer, then so be it. If there's not, then I die by my own sword. And I want to be able to choose my price. You're going to tell me that Bill Withers' Lean On Me is worth 0.004 per stream, same as, I don't even want to name no artists right now, but you know, there's a gang of
Roy
artists.
Roy Wood Jr., you can just say it. Roy Wood Jr. comedy albums from Comedy Central. It's not the same price. It's fine. I'll lay on that grenade. It's fine.
Take the hit. Yes, you can take the hit. So you get me, right? And so what I think is,
yeah,
why can't Mr. Withers' estate say, nah, this is worth $4 a stream. And if you don't like it, so be it. But this is the price. It's not going down, because this is what the worth is in terms of value, artistic credibility, authenticity, and what he delivered to the world. So, you know, if there's going to be a number, at least let the artists decide, and we can figure it out over time.
Well, only 3% of artists on Spotify made more than $1,000 annually. And Spotify's, you know, they've kind of said, their position on this. We're going to break down that a little bit after the break. We are speaking with senior Daily Show writer Daniel Radosh and the wonderful, wonderful songwriter and musician Allo Black about how I can get more royalties for my Comedy Central specials. This is Beyond the Scenes.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Allo, when we did, you did the parody song for the show, and I've always been curious about this because we don't get many celebrities. I'll say this. We are surprised when people say yes to us. Would that be a fair statement, Radosh? Like,
no, what are you talking about? People love doing the Daily Show. They're knocking down our door.
Hey, will you come do a comedy thing with, like, people love to come to be interviewed by Trevor, but when you ask them for, hey, will you come joke with us? It's, what is the joke? What is the nature of the joke? How will this joke affect my standings in the public eye after this joke? Yeah. So just talk to us a little bit about just creating that parody song and what it was like, what that whole experience was like.
Well, we had a good feeling about this one because it wasn't just like, oh, we have a joke and let's just get a celebrity to do it so that we have a celebrity on our show. We knew this was a topic that Allo was interested in and had spoken out about. And so we're like, you know, if he wants people to learn about this, like, honestly, more people are going to watch the segment and listen to this podcast if he's part of it. So it's like, we had a pretty good feeling that he would do it. So we were very, of course, happy when he did. What happened was the head writer, Dan Amira, who's always pitching parody songs anyway, we're like, take a crack at writing some new lyrics for I Need a Dollar that are about streaming. So Amira, you know, put his little baby to bed and then in about 3 hours wrote two verses and a bridge for a new version of I Need a Dollar. We sent it off. And I have to say, when we got that recording back from you, Allo, we all literally burst into tears because it was so much better than we could have imagined. Like, you committed to that performance. Like, you were, you know, like you were performing at Madison Square Garden. Like, so many artists would have been like, okay, I'm doing a joke song, but I got to make sure the audience knows that I think this is a little stupid and that these clowns, you know, are not. But like, you sold that like it was the most heartrending experience. Like it was, you know, like it was a breakup, you know, like you were like, I was like, you know, my soul was struck by your anger at Spotify and your heartbreak. And so I was like, oh, this is going
to
be good.
Yeah. Take us from the email to the studio, Allo.
Yeah, I got the email, and I did think at first, I thought everything you just said, Roy, I was like, how is this going to affect my standing in the music industry? But then I, you know, it came to me, I was like, you know what? This is serious for me. It really is. I've been in front of Senate hearings around music being paid to our most legendary artists and how rate courts are setting up the rates for what we're being paid as artists. So I was like, you know what? Any opportunity to spread the gospel a little bit more to people, the better. No better opportunity than on such a well-respected show with a well-respected host. I'm talking about Roy, not Trevor, you know what I'm saying? And it's just, to me, I was like, if I do this right, if I look serious about it, they can make the joke happen. It's gonna work for them. I'm not a comedian. I don't need to try to be funny here. I'm a singer. Let me do what I do good. And they've already done what they do well. They wrote the lyrics. I'm gonna just try to sell it the way I can sell it.
And that makes it funnier. I mean, when you perform something that's a little bit silly, deadly serious, it makes it 10 times funnier. And also you get across that it actually is serious. So it couldn't have worked out better.
Are there any streaming services that you think are better than the others, or are they all to some degree culpable in this? Like what's good about streaming? What do you like about streaming in general? And then are there any of the sites that are a little, you know, which one can I feel good about you being underpaid on?
I would say you can feel good about Tidal. They pay at least a penny per stream. I would say that you can feel good. For me, what I like about streaming is accessibility. You get access to everything you want when you want it. And that's sort of like the light bulb, you know, the electricity in your house, the water in your tap. When you turn it on, it works, and you pay for what you use, right? That's what I would change. It's like you pay for what you use. And even, you know, you have your peak hour rates with your electricity. And so you should have your peak songs and peak artists that can charge a premium for what they deliver to you. But yeah, I would say Tidal is probably the best rate. Apple is a better rate than Spotify. And I think over time, it'll probably get better and better. The UN, United Nations, has a subcommittee on intellectual property. And they actually put out a white paper on streaming globally and said point blank, it's not working for artists. So we got the UN on our side.
Well, that means any day now things are happening if you got the UN on your side. Let me ask you something, actually, because you brought up something interesting. The way that you said, you know, you listen to what you want when you want it. And it's like, you know, I actually do listen to about kind of half the music that I listen to that way. But I think I'm a little unusual. I think the way most people now actually listen to music services, and I think because the music services want it this way, is through playlists, right? Where you just like pick a mood or an activity or, you know, a genre or a decade, and you just put that on and they've selected the music for you. And it becomes more like listening to a radio station. And that's why some artists have said, oh, we should actually get paid the way we do when a song gets played on the radio. It's a little confusing to me. Do you mind explaining, like, what's the difference? Like, because you, as a songwriter, you actually do make pretty good money if you have a hit song on the radio, whereas you don't make very good money if you have a hit song on a streaming service. Is that right?
Sort of. You know, what's interesting is they have this concept of leaning back, which means you're not really actively choosing a song. It's like you're saying, it's a playlist. And they have this concept of interactive, which is also, I think, based on like playlisting. And then there's active users who are actually deciding and choosing who they want to listen to. They're purposefully seeking out a particular song or artist. And those pay differently. Those rates pay differently as well in terms of people who are paid subscribers versus non-paid subscribers on these services. To make a dollar on, let's say, Spotify from a non-paid subscriber, it takes 560 streams or something like that. Maybe 150 streams from a paid subscriber to make a dollar. And so I say that because when you get this concept of who's leaning forward, it also depends on leaning forward, meaning choosing specifically, it also depends on whether they're buying into the system, whether they're subscribing. And if they're not, it's not really helping on the economic side.
If you have a hit song on an old-fashioned radio station, that pays differently than a song on Spotify does, right? And can it be made so that it's more similar?
On Spotify, I get paid on the publishing side and on the master side. There are two copyrights associated with any song. There's the underlying work, the songwriting, stuff that you can note on a ledger of sheet music. And then there's the master recording, the stuff that you actually hear playing through the speaker. And those are the two copyrights. Spotify pays out on both of them, albeit way less for the underlying work, the songwriting. Now on radio, they have historically never paid out on the master side. They only pay out on the songwriting side, on the publisher side. And that is a huge difference. That's been a fight that, it's very difficult for the record labels to wage and even to win. Radio conglomerates are very powerful. This is way more inside baseball than you need, but imagine going to your local lawmaker, your senator or congressman, and saying, hey, can you help us draft a law to change how radio pays music artists for their master copyright, for their audio? And then the lawmaker is going to say, I kind of need that radio station to advertise when I'm running for office. So yeah. I don't want to be in their bad book. So they won't do it. So we'll never be able to get that opportunity the way that we should, just because we're not going to find the support.
And the record label doesn't care because they need the exposure from the radio to drive everybody to get more money from the touring, which they're also in the artist's pockets on. To me, the downside to streaming, and I guess, I grew up, I'm 42. So I grew up in the era of the midnight album sale, where the hottest album, you went to the mall. I remember going to a midnight sale at Tallahassee Mall for Masterpiece Ghetto D. We went again for Tupac All Eyes on Me. Like, I remember Blockbuster Music, Radosh, when they introduced being able to listen to the album in the store. Those little listening stations. You were like, oh my God, I get to hear the whole shit in the store? You would lose your mind. Do you remember, Allo, do you remember the last physical album that you bought? Like, just as a fan of music, like, because like I'm literally thinking, and I feel like it might have been something from Ludacris. Like, I feel like Ludacris and Little John were probably the last two artists that 05, 06-ish, because I was scared of Napster for a while because I caught a virus off BearShare, so I played the game straight up for a minute.
The last record that I bought was probably something I would listen to a lot of underground hip hop. One of my favorite artists was the late, great Jay Dilla. He produced for Erykah Badu and he worked with D'Angelo, and he did work with Q-Tip from Tribe Called Quest. So I probably purchased, vinyl, his last works, Donuts.
Radosh, was it Taylor Swift? What was your last
album? Yeah, I'll make it a little bit more white in here with my answer. No, I'll say that, one of the things, I honestly don't remember, like, just to buy an album for an album, like, just to listen to. But I do know that one of the things that artists do now, precisely because they're not making money on CD sales, is that they'll put out special packages, like, for super fans, where there's, like, extra tracks and a book and all sorts of stuff. So, like, I'm a super Bob Dylan fan, and he put out like an album of like 80 tracks of every demo and every take of every song on Blood on the Tracks. And it had, a book and a poster. And I was like, yeah, I'll buy that. I don't even have a CD player. Like, I also had to get the digital version so that I could listen to it on my, through my system, because I don't have a CD player to actually play it. But I did buy it. And I guess that's one thing, right, Allo, that like artists are kind of scrambling to do is put out these special things that have like extra bonuses for the fans. Is that sustainable? Is that a real thing? Or is that just like,
especially in COVID when you can't tour?
It's all industry. Yeah, we can't tour. It's all industry, industry inventions. If I recall kind of the history of how the industry of music worked, it was like singles, started out as singles. It wasn't albums. And then one of the early rock bands realized, or the executives realized, well, I could fit about 13 songs, 10 songs on an album, and then we could sell it for more. Same production, manufacturing costs. So that's how things changed. I would say I don't mind it going back to a singles market. I love albums, but you know, if it has to be per sales, yeah, try to keep it at by my each song per song, and we don't need to do all these extra gimmicks to try to sell more and do more. You know, we have this concept right now called the waterfall album. The waterfall album is where I did this on my last release. So you drop an album, it has 10 songs, and then each month you add a new song to the album. And so it keeps people engaged. So you have to try to find brand new ways to keep people engaged in purchasing the music, and also just staying on playlists. They don't want they meaning the playlisters and the streaming services, they want everything that's brand new. They don't want your 2 month old album. So you got to find a way to refresh it and make it, you know, brand new.
I would love to talk more about that and what some of the solutions are. You know, number one, how are artists going to circumvent this? What can we do to put pressure on the record labels and the streamers? And what can we as fans do? I have one idea that might work. You're probably not going to like it, Allo, but I'm going to try it anyway. We'll talk about it after the break. This is Beyond the Scenes.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
We've been talking about music streaming and just, you know, how shady it is and exploitative, and how the record label time and time again figures out a way to take advantage of the artist. Allo Black, I guess what I should first do as a member of ASCAP myself, tell you thank you for what you're doing, because I didn't know this until a couple of months ago. Motherfucking stand-up comedy, we only get paid for the recording, not realizing that our joke is essentially an acoustical composition which we wrote ourselves as well, and you should pay me as a composer. I have no idea what type of money I'm going to get, but if I get more than 300, I'm putting it in Bitcoin. What can fans do in general? Because more often than not, this battle between artists and the record label, traditionally, as a fan, I've always felt helpless. Like when you can correct me. I'm sure you're more of a music encyclopedia than me, but I just won't name the artists. But I know that there have been traditionally a lot of rappers who speak out against their label and go, I'm only getting 50 cent a CD or $1 a CD. And as a fan, the reaction from a lot of people, especially a lot of black people, a lot of hip hop fans, well, you shouldn't have signed that deal, not knowing the intricacies of how you get distribution and how you get in stores at that time. But it seems like distribution is less of a necessary need. So what can we as fans do to even try to help support artists other than just set up 8 laptops and just let all them shits play Allo Black?
The best thing that you could do to support fans is go directly to the fan, to the artist for the merchandise that they're selling. The artist, if they have their own infrastructure, can deal with you on a one-to-one basis. There are, you know, many of the major artists have such a huge infrastructure around them that it's not going to be easy to do that. But for independent artists and up-and-coming artists, they generally have their own merch website where you can buy a t-shirt or whatever. They might be able to sell you a song one-to-one from their website as well, their Bandcamp or their TuneCore. And, you know, share their music. Share the love and spread the gospel of what they're doing so that when we do open back up and people can get into concerts, they can get a chance to get that concert ticket money. That's definitely one of the plays for a lot of artists. I know a lot of artists that survive off of that touring money.
Boy, I bought concert tickets. I'm just remembering now in January 2020, and the concert is still officially just postponed. They haven't canceled it, so I haven't got my money back yet, but I cannot wait for that concert to actually come around. And I'm going
Radosh, on the writing side of this, how do you all decide how deep, because this is a very deep and intricate and layered issue. When we start getting into solutions, I know in the field department, we generally only have 2 quadrants that we can exist in for 4 minutes. We can either exist in how did we get to this problem or how do we solve this problem?
Yep.
We rarely have space for both in the field department. How are y'all able to sparse out what some of the solutions could be and should be versus what people just have to go and read up on their own?
Yeah. And then, boy, and that's one reason why it's great that there's a podcast like this where we can kind of take it to the solution, because, you know, we write it all in and then it's really like, you know, it's a comedy show. So it's like, well, what's the funniest part? What's the most interesting part? What's the most engaging part? And in this case, it was like, we just spent so much time just like talking about how we got to this point and how messed up it is. And we had a lot of good jokes off that. And then we literally ended up squeezing and here are some possible solutions. And then Trevor like rattles them off in one sentence. And, you know, it's purely that simple. But I actually want to ask you to bring that up about solutions, because like, Allo, the stuff you were saying about like what the fans can do, all 100% true, right? Like on a day-to-day level, we can do that. But Roy, earlier you said that this is actually a labor story, which I think it kind of is. And one of the things that we found with like stories that involve labor or corporations is that a lot of times it's not anything that, you know, individuals like us, like even the biggest fans in the world, we can't really solve it. It has to be like some kind of big systemic change. And so I'm wondering, like, man, is this something where it's like all the artists kind of need to band together and go to the labels as one big group and say, we're changing this because you need us more than we need you. And maybe the fans can like support the artists in that or go to, you know, your lawmakers. I know you say they don't want to go up against the radio stations, but maybe they also don't want to go up against, you know, every voter. So I don't know. Maybe there's like some kind of bigger thing like that could happen in addition. It's one of the solutions we didn't get to.
I feel like the solution is going to be in a technology solution. I feel like it's going to be a technology solution. I feel like technologists will help us through this. Artists working with the technology sector and coding sector. The tools that are in place right now for streaming, they work well for distribution, for consumption. What needs to switch though is the pay the pay mechanism, and I have a feeling that, you know, the blockchain is going to help us do that. You know, with the technology that exists now, you can basically ID, like think about Shazam, you can ID every song. It has a digital audio footprint, and that footprint ultimately can dictate how your payment is delivered. I've been an advocate of the phone services that you use, the internet services, the ISPs that you use to be the paywall. And so just like your utilities, every time you turn on a tap or turn on the light, it recognizes it and you pay for that at the end of the month. And I feel like, you know, that's one of the ways we can think about it.
It's like a digital a la carte type system, yeah.
Yeah, but you don't want them monitoring your data. So there's definitely got to be some privacy controls.
Allo, I hear what you're saying, but I already have the vaccine with the 8 microchips in it. It's fine. I'll be fine.
if they figured out a way to like charge us for like every little thing we do in like some game, it's like you play a game and you're like, oh, I just want to do this little cheat. It's like, eh, I'll pay a penny for that. Like, boy, if we're doing that for like crappy mobile games, we could sure as hell do that for music. It seems like that should be doable.
Here's a naive question, though. And this is coming from a guy that has seen people go viral on TikTok and Twitch and YouTube and IG stories with their own original stuff, who had no label, they had no support. What does the future of streaming look like? Because what is the advantage of a record label? If I, like right now, what's to stop me from going in the studio, getting my shit recorded and mastered, and then getting some ISRC code, digital footprint embedded in the track, and sending that out onto the internet and uploading that to set? Because there's ways for me to get on a streamer without a record label. I could just send my, like, there's digital distribution companies that'll just take a 30% pinch off of the dollar, and I get to keep 70 cents. So what's to stop an artist that's popular? Like, why do I need a label if everybody's listening to their stuff on a streamer anyway, and I can get to a streamer without a label?
Yes, that's a good question. Ultimately, the answer is whether or not you're gonna be part of the global consciousness as an artist. You may be in for a second, for a hot minute with your hot song, but you know, these big boys are there to play. And if you want to get that radio, you're going to have to work with them, because this is the decades old kind of, you know, inside club. And then if you do have that one hit, they're going to come at you with a huge bag and be like, look, here's a huge amount of money that we're going to offer you to join our record label so that we could probably never pay attention to you again. And you probably won't get all this money. It's just promised to you over time if you perform. And so, you know, when you hear about these big multi-million dollar deals, these are usually spread out across 10 albums, you know, and multiple years. The artist doesn't necessarily see all that money. And you're looking at a lot of young cats who are flossing, but they're flossing. They got a bag, but they're flossing off money that's not going to last forever. That's not forever, but ever money. Some of that's going to be gone. The reason why they end up going to the record labels is because they get that big, big paycheck in front of their face, rather than having to wait for the slow drip from the streams.
What does it take then? Because, you know, there's independent artists that have stayed independent, like two guys that I've enjoyed, one Immortal Technique, the other one Tech N9ne. And, you know, Tech N9ne is a rapper that, if you know him, you know him. He definitely does not get the spins on regular radio, but seems to have carved out a decent living for himself, and he's not going to get mobbed at the airport the way Drake or somebody from Young Money would or whatever. But why do you think that, or what does it take for the artists and the creators to realize that they're the ones with the power and not the labels and the radio stations?
It's going to take a lot of communication from, I'd say, the more mature and seasoned artists in the music industry, to work with some of the younger ones and help them to recognize, you know, young cats, they're rebellious. They just want to do what they do and get their money. They're not really paying attention to the history of everything and where the trend is leading, or at least where the activism within the artistry is leaning. It's a tough battle. We're battling culture, cultural norms. We're battling some deep-seated industrial norms. And I'll just keep trying to stand up and speak my truth, you know.
Roy, this is why when we write anything, we almost always stay away from what the solution is, because the solution is always really hard. It's just really hard. It's much easier to talk about the problem than the solution. But Alo, man, thank you for trying, at least in this arena.
Yeah, this is great, man.
Yeah,
that's
you.
Pretty much all the time we have. Brother, where can people find you on the internet if they want to support what you're doing and set up their 8 laptops?
Yes. The best thing to do would be to, of course, stream my music on any of your favorite streaming platforms. But I'm most active on Instagram and sharing whatever is brand new and that kind of information personally and with my team. So, you know, check for me there.
Okay, done deal. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I'm Roy Wood Jr. Daniel Radosh, sir, thank you so, so much. And you know what I'm going to try and do, Alo? I'm going to try and get you on this Paramount Plus and get your music streaming on a video channel of some sort. Let's put the parody video up on Paramount Plus.
There's a Paramount Plus, Roy? I got to look into that.
Well, absolutely, there is a Paramount Plus, bringing you all of the best in the Paramount library, including hit shows like Comedy Central's The Daily Show.
I'm sure the solution to this problem is another giant corporation. I think you hit the nail on the head, Roy.
Let me tell you a story. It's gonna sound a little bit dumb. 1 million streams will buy you a brand new pack of gum.
Listen to The Daily Show Beyond the Scenes on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Want to go even further beyond the scenes? Check out the video version of Beyond the Scenes on The Daily Show's YouTube page.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases, and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.